I've had 80,000 people, you know, boo me when I missed a kick.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today, we're chatting with Justice Robert Thomas, a former NFL kicker and recently retired Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court. The book about his life, A View from Two Benches, out now, talks about his time as both a practicing lawyer and NFL kicker from 1975 to 1986. While many leave the NFL and still work in sport, he pursued a robust career in the law. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Thanks for having me, MK.
Well, I'm going to get right to it because you were a professional football player who then went on to have a very successful law career as you just retired from the Illinois Supreme Court. And so everything I read, there was nothing that said a pause in between football and law school. It seems like you did both. Is that true? And also, how?
Yeah, that's right. I was a government major at Notre Dame, and I did say that I wanted to go to law school when I was interviewed. I thought that I would hopefully go in the city that I would play in. I was originally drafted by the Los Angeles Rams and was cut on the last cut. Did not make that team. But then the next year, the Rams re-signed me. And I had to go through what they call procedural waivers, where if a team, at least then, signed you and then cut you and then re-signed you, they had to put you through waivers and give every other NFL team a chance to pick you up so you couldn't stockpile players, I think, is the reason for that. So I was picked up by both the Bears and the Redskins, and the Bears were lower in the standings, so I was awarded to the Bears. And I played for 3 years in the NFL. And again, when I would be interviewed, I would say that I wanted to go to law school. And there was a professor that used to be at Notre Dame Law School by the name of Bud Murdoch, who had become the dean of Loyola Law School. And my brother, who was 3 years behind me at Notre Dame, had started law school at Loyola. And the dean, Bud Murdoch, went up to my brother and said he'd like to have breakfast with me. So I went down to have breakfast with Dean Murdoch. And at breakfast, he said, I keep reading in the paper where you want to go to law school. What's stopping you? And I think probably what was stopping me was that I was, you know, 3 years in the NFL and enjoying being a professional football player. But I said, well, Dean, maybe I'll go this off season. And he said, well, why don't you just start this season? So with my brother being there and the fact that Bud Murdoch reached out to me, I did start that season, Bear season. And I did as few as five and as many as 10 hours during the season for the next 4 years, and took a full-time load, law school load, during the off season. And I was technically a day student because I had more day hours than night school hours, but I graduated while playing football in the typical night school time frame of 4 years.
And was this somewhat of a passion project, or did you have that thought of after football I'll be in law? Because I think a lot of people don't look that far ahead in the future. Maybe people even think to, you know, keep with a sports career. Had you always wanted to go into law afterwards?
Yeah, I told you that I had I was released from the Rams, and I thought that I had done everything I possibly could have done to make a football team. So I was thinking of just going to law school at that time and not trying out for another NFL team. But when the Rams called again, the Los Angeles Rams called again, and later in the year said they wanted to re-sign me and basically told me that they had made a mistake in letting me go, I thought, well, okay, they know about me, so maybe I'll give football another crack and go on to law school. So yeah, it was something that I had always thought about doing. I think, you know, you're kind of an impressionable kid at 21, 22 years old, and I was enjoying playing football. And actually, even when I went to Loyola Law School, I went and asked the general manager of the team. His name was Jim Finks, who was a fine general manager, if I could actually even go to law school while I was playing football. And because I was a kicker, he actually thought it was a very good idea because he didn't want me to concentrate on whether I made or missed the last kick, and he thought it would give me something to do. He said if it was a regular field player, he may have had a different position, but with me, he indicated it was okay. So, yeah, that's just how it happened. You know, looking back, having been a lawyer and now back to being practicing law being a circuit court judge and an appellate justice and getting to the Illinois Supreme Court and even being Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for 3 years, it's hard to believe how God works in your life, right, and puts these opportunities. And I don't know. I don't know how much longer I would have waited if the Dean of Loyola didn't tell me, hey, why don't you start now?
Once you had graduated, did you think about stopping football at that moment, or had you thought, okay, this is just good to have on the back burner?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I always thought that I would play as long as I was effective or as long as the NFL would allow me to play. I really thought that, you know, the law was something good to have. And the Bears, unfortunately, during my years, we only went to the playoffs a couple of times, so the offseason was a little longer for Bear players than maybe for other teams' players. So when I graduated in 1981 from Loyola Law School, I joined I was with a couple of firms out in the western suburbs here and practiced law during the offseason, and then would keep in touch with the lawyers that I practiced with, and then I would go back to playing football. That happened until 1986 when I was injured. I was actually with the Giants at that time and only played in the first game. I tore ligaments in my ankle, and then it was pretty much full-time from that point forward, practicing law, and then most of my career in the judiciary.
So what did that re-entry process look like when you went from NFL player to full-time law? Because you had, like you said, you had done a little bit of both going back and forth, but how did it look to quote unquote retire from one career and then go into a whole other career?
Yeah, that's a good question. There were I wouldn't call them bumps in the road, but I think that you're trying to get your bearings on what you really want to do with the rest of your life, because I was fortunate enough to play 12 years in the National Football League, which is a pretty long time to get 12 years in. You asked earlier about having a second career or something to fall back on. I don't know what the statistics are now. I know when I played, the average length of time that a player played professional football was 4 years. And certainly you weren't making enough money back then for sure to retire after 4 years and think you could do whatever you wanted. So I knew there was another career waiting for me at some time. When I was injured with the Giants in 1986, I came back, and for just a short period of time, I was with Kemper Sports Management, which is a marketing agency, and I was in-house counsel there. But I missed litigation aspects of the profession. And shortly after that, I joined a law firm in Wheaton and became a partner in that firm. But I told them that my real passion was to get into the judiciary. And they said that would be great. And I applied for an associate judgeship, which is an appointed position appointed by the circuits, not too long after I was with that firm, maybe a year or less that I was with the firm. And I was recommended by the Bar Association, but I didn't get that particular judgeship. So the next time there was an opportunity to run for circuit judge, I ran. And in 1988, I ran for circuit judge, and I ran against two associate judges, and in a close election, won that election. And then 6 years later, I ran for the appellate court in a not-so-close election, kind of a landslide. I won that election. And then in 2000, I ran for the Supreme Court and was on the Supreme Court from 2000 through just end of February of this year, almost 20 years on the Supreme Court, and served as Chief Justice from 2005 to 2008.
And what about the judiciary was so appealing to you that you wanted to leave litigation and, you know, pursue this career as a judge?
You know, it actually goes back to my playing days when I was, and I told you I was out in the Western Suburbs. I actually was with a fine trial lawyer, still a friend to this day. His name's Jack Callahan, and he tried a ton of cases, and you know, we would discuss cases, and he said, boy, oh boy, you always see both sides of the issue. And we do have an adversarial system. He said, you really should be a judge someday. And I started thinking about that. And I thought it's a pretty good job description when you're supposed to be fair and when you're supposed to listen to both sides. And I thought it did fit my personality quite well. And So it's just something I always aspired to, and once I got into the legal profession and was fortunate enough to reach the pinnacle, at least from a state level.
What are some of those decisions that the Illinois Supreme Court makes versus maybe their local judges or versus the federal Supreme Court?
You know, it's interesting because I don't think a lot of people realize that you have an absolute right to an appeal. But you don't have an absolute right to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court. So when you ask what type of cases we hear, I mean, there's some cases we have to hear. The Illinois, I say we, because it's been such a short period of time that I've been gone, but the Illinois Supreme Court has to hear, you know, cases where there's been a finding of unconstitutionality, or they would have to hear a case of, in fact, when I got to the court, in 2000, we were still hearing death penalty cases. Of course, there isn't a death penalty in Illinois anymore. So we would have to hear any cases involving the death penalty, or we'd have to hear cases with the removal of a governor, for example. But there's very few cases that we are required to hear. So the bulk of the cases that the Illinois Supreme Court would hear, there'd be a vote taken. There's seven Illinois Supreme Court justices, and if someone lost on appeal, they would file what you call a petition for leave to appeal with the Illinois Supreme Court, and we would vote independent. The seven of us would vote independent of each other on those particular cases and decide which case we would take. And it would take four votes. Sometimes different judges we'd come to term. We'd go to Springfield, what they call terms, and sometimes we would try to rally the troops if we thought there was a particularly good case that we should take or a reason why we should take a case. But at the end of the day, there had to be four votes to take those cases. And if they didn't get the four votes, short of them trying to get an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, which would be a remote possibility, you know, their days had ended. So it was a, particularly important part of the job to decide which cases to hear. And I would say the bulk of the cases we would hear, they could be criminal, they could be civil, it didn't matter, but we would take cases where there might be disagreement. There's five districts in the state of Illinois, disagreement in the appellate court from various districts, and try to settle the law, or cases that would impact many people in the state of Illinois. We couldn't take every case where we thought the appellate court may have gotten it wrong. I mean, and we tried not to take cases that would only affect the parties involved. So hope that helps.
And when you were first on the bench, was this right before the vote for the cases that you had to take, or did you come after they had already decided what cases to listen to?
On the Illinois Supreme Court?
Yes.
Yeah, that happens every term. We look at about, we could look to up to 500 petitions for leave to appeal between every term. So the Illinois Supreme Court meets in January, March, May, September, and November. And in between, let's just take the January and the March term, people who have lost, litigants who have lost appeals would sometimes petition the court to hear their case because they thought that the appellate court got it wrong. And we, like I said, we here look at anywhere between 200 and 500 petitions for leave to appeal between January and March. And when we got down there in March, we'll have already voted on those cases. And then we have what we call a petition for leave to appeal conference, where we sit down and actually discuss them and see which ones have the four required votes to take. And then those cases will be set for oral briefing schedule and oral arguments.
So before you took the bench, did you have any goals or expectations that you were hoping to bring to the group when you were just starting? Because, you know, many people get into politics and get into any of the branches of government to help better society. Was that something that was on your mind before you had heard any of the cases?
You know, I think that took shape and came more after I had been there. The time that you really have a chance to do that on the Illinois Supreme Court is when you're Chief Justice. And I was Chief Justice, as I said, between 2005 and 2008. And I believe the hallmark of my time there as Chief Justice was a professionalism commission, which I instituted in my time as Chief. Every chief has the opportunity to work on pet projects. And, you know, I had noticed both as a lawyer and as a judge that we were going down the wrong road with respect to the profession at times. I think the profession had gone from, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases where a handshake was your bond, to now it was a win at all cost mentality. So we established, we had already started a professionalism committee. And when I got to be, I had gone to a seminar on professionalism, and I kind of brought that to the court, the idea of starting a professionalism committee. And then it became a commission. And at the time, we were one of 13 states. There might be maybe 14 or 15 now that have professionalism commissions that tries. The commissions tried through various means, be it mentoring, be it town hall meetings, be it seminar or continuing legal education programs that they put on, to inject an attitude of professionalism and civility within the profession. And so I think that was probably my greatest achievement as chief. You have, as I said, you have more opportunity to institute things that are on your heart when you are chief. And we got that done, along with when I was chief, mandatory continuing legal education. We started the whole idea of e-filing. So that's when I was able to institute some of the things that were important to me.
And we mentioned in the intro that you have a book coming out, which kind of takes a look at both of your different careers. How would you say that they're similar after having taken the course through both of them? You've finished your NFL career, and now you've finished your judiciary career. How would you put the two next to each other?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning the book. In fact, I believe it's been available for a while on Amazon, on Kindle, A View from Two Benches. You know, how they're similar, I joke around and say that I became a judge because I didn't want people to boo anymore, you know? And that's what would happen when you're a kicker, right? That's the life of a kicker. You're a hero or a goat. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the things, I don't know that it's a similarity, but I do know that it's certainly something that one profession helps the other. You know, I had my name in the paper, a picture in the paper for both winning and losing games in Chicago for 10 years. I played in Chicago, 12 up overall. And so I had my moment in the sun. And I think that one of the things that judges really have to guard against is, you know, just feeling that they're really important, right? I think they have to try to look at the robes as reflecting responsibility, not power. And I think sometimes there is a tendency for judges to think that it's them rather than the position. You know, there's the old saying that a judge's jokes are always funny, and there's always somebody holding the door for you when you're a judge. You know, now I'm no longer a judge. I don't think anybody's going to be holding the door for me anymore. But I think that the profession of being there helped me to have a sense of humility in the position of judge, and also not taking myself too seriously. So I think in that way the two careers are similar, or at least the one career being a football player helped in the second career. And certainly the pressure, the pressure of going out there each day and having to perform and people watching you perform. And there's a certain pressure when you're making rulings in front of people and just doing, you know, the best you can and doing what you think is right, applying a lot of the facts to achieve a just result. I think that there's some carryover from in dealing with the pressure from one profession to the other.
Do you think it was harder to deal with the pressure from the larger general public in the scope of football player than in judicial reasons, right? Because you're going to have much more candid, everyday people looking at you as a football player, but there's still a lot of backing behind being the Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court. Which do you think held more pressure?
I think probably internally, you know, kicking footballs is great and I really enjoyed it, but the impact that you can make in being a judge and trying to achieve the right decision and shaping the law, being on the Illinois Supreme Court, I think obviously was a more important position, I'll put it that way. I will agree with you, though, that I'm always going to be known more as the Chicago Bear kicker than I am a judge. I've told this story before, but it's absolutely true. I was in a supermarket and I was going down the cereal aisle and a guy comes up to me and he said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Yeah, go ahead." He said, "Didn't you used to be Bob Thomas?" I said, "Yeah, I used to be Bob Thomas," right? And it's an indication that he remembered me as being the former player, and that's how people knew me. And so, yeah, there was a pressure in that. And certainly, as I joked about earlier, I've had 80,000 people, you know, boo me when I missed a kick. And they're not going to boo you when you're on the bench, at least until they walk out of the room if they didn't like your decision. So there were different types of pressures in each position. I've been really blessed. I mean, yeah, God has blessed me. I mean, to be able to play at Notre Dame, to win a national championship at Notre Dame, play 12 years in the National Football League, to then go on to the Illinois Supreme Court and stay there long enough to be Chief Justice and end up being there 20 years and 32 years on the bench. And now to join, you know, Joe Power's firm. I mean, Joe is, in my opinion, if not the best, certainly one of the best trial attorneys in the country, let alone the city. So I've really been blessed. And even on top of that, the more important things than anything I've mentioned so far, to have a great wife and Maggie and three great kids and 9 grandchildren. I mean, it's, sometimes it's very humbling. It's you know, it makes me choke up a little bit to think how you know God took this kid that grew up with immigrant parents and to end up with that type of life. You know, I've been really blessed.
And if there was anything you could say to anyone who is trying to juggle doing both or is feeling a pressure to have two very different life career trajectories, what would you say?
Yeah, some of what we've already talked about, MK, I would say that, in fact, maybe the last part really goes into this question, you know, just, you know, you have to prioritize, right? I mean, you have to look at what's important to you. I think that, you know, certainly faith and family, you know, would be at the top of my list. And I think that's what the list, you know, if I was going to give a recommendation, I mean, just that's what I would say to the listeners first. You know, you have to prioritize. If there are a couple careers and one of those careers is taking away from family or allowing your ego to get carried away and losing your sense of balance and humility, you know, maybe you have to reflect on whether you should be doing that. But outside of that, I've had that opportunity. I mean, both careers have afforded me a chance to still, you know, my one career ended early enough that my kids were with the Bears in the NFL. My kids were still, you know, very young, and I had an opportunity both in the law firms that I practiced with at the time to be around my family, and certainly the judiciary gave me an opportunity with to have a little more normalcy as far as the job went to make sure that I could still put my family first. So something that they like, you know, you're not going to really excel at something that you don't like, I don't think. But also one that doesn't, you know, a career that doesn't make you lose perspective on what's really important in life.
Well, thank you so much again for chatting with us today. And if you guys didn't get the gist, be sure to check out his book. It really is an interesting tale. If you can't tell already, you've had such a fascinating life between being, and I don't think we mentioned enough that he was a very successful kicker. It's not like you just played for the Bears. You had some of the highest points scored for the Bears at the time. And then obviously you're very successful in your career on the bench. So thank you so much again for chatting with us today.
Thank you, MK. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski, and feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.